Hey there, welcome to Football with Grant Wall. Thanks so much for joining me. We've got a great guest today, Robbie Keane. You can sign up now for a free or paid subscription to my new newsletter at grantwall.com. It has all my writing, including magazine-style features and on-location stories for every U.S. Men's World Cup qualifier. I'm really proud of it and can't tell you how much I appreciate your support with that. So check it out. Now, here's my interview with Robbie Keane. Our guest now may be MLS's most successful foreign signing on the field in league history, and he's had a standout career outside MLS as well. Robbie Keane won three MLS Cup titles with the LA Galaxy and was the MLS Most Valuable Player in 2014. He had a 20-year senior club career with Tottenham, Liverpool, Inter, Wolves, Leeds United, and others. And he's the all-time leading scorer for Ireland with 68 international goals and 146 appearances. Robbie, it's great to see you again. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, pleasure, Grant. Great to see you after all these years. It's good to finally sit down with you and have a conversation. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, first off, how are you? How's your family? And where are you speaking to me from today?
Yeah, everyone's good. Thanks. The kids are good, getting big, 12 and 5. We're in Dublin after we left LA. We moved back here. So after traveling around for many years playing, we finally settled down back in our hometown of Dublin.
It's funny, this morning I sent a message to your old Galaxy coach, Bruce Arena, who's doing well in Boston these days.
And yeah.
I asked him if he had a message to pass on to you that would get a good response from you. And it was funny, he didn't say anything about soccer, but he said I should ask if you're proud of your fellow Irishman, Harrington, heading up the Ryder Cup team.
Yeah, I've just been watching it. Yes, it's I'm delighted for Padraig. I know him. He's been a great, obviously, golf player. But hopefully, he'll be a successful captain for Europe. I know that's not music to your ears, but it's definitely music to my ears. So hopefully, we can get it done. So it's going to be 3 days now of sitting on the couch watching the Ryder Cup, which is always good.
I should tell all the listeners we're recording this on Friday. It's going to be coming out on Monday after the Ryder Cup's over. But I always tell Bruce, we had him on the show recently. I think he would make a good sports radio show host in Boston sometime with questions like that.
He's great, Bruce.
Yeah, we had him on the show recently. We also had Jovan Karofsky from the Galaxy. I'm co-hosting a podcast with Landon Donovan.
Who's Jovan?
And, I mean, you won three MLS Cup titles in 4 years with the Galaxy from 2011 to 2014 on a team with David Beckham, Donovan, Juninho, and others. I still think that you were the final key piece to take those teams over the top. When you think back to those teams today, what stands out the most to you?
The quality that we had, certainly. I think we were very strong. All over the park, and you know, before I got there, you know, David was definitely desperate to get someone in to kind of help them push on, and I'd like to think I certainly did that. And as you said, to win three MLS Cups in 5 years, I think it was there. You know, it was a great achievement, but you know, we had a great team. We had, as I said, we had real quality. When Landon was, you know, obviously different class, can score goals, can assist. Works very hard for the team, and David with his quality, but not just us. You know, as you mentioned, there people like Juninho and Saves in the middle of the park, always difficult to play against. And defensively, we were sound with people like Omar and AJ. So all over the park, I felt like we were strong. The spine of the team was very, very good, and I think that's ultimately why we became successful. And then, as you said, when you got people in your team that can score goals and assist, we knew as players like myself, Landon, for example, we knew that we are quite solid defensively, and we can hold out. We'll, at some stage, you know, one of us would score.
You know, David Beckham's first 2 years in Los Angeles didn't go very well, and then things totally changed, and the Galaxy ended up winning trophies, especially when you came. Did David Beckham have a role in you coming to the Galaxy in the first place?
Yeah, yes. David came, if you remember, off seasons, he used to come to, you know, back home to England, back to his home, and then he came training with Tottenham for a few months. And then we were just having a conversation, and just asked me would I be interested at some stage going to the MLS. I said, yeah, I would. It's certainly something that I would look to in the future. But he went back, and then before you know it, a few months later, I was on the phone to David, on the phone to Tim Lewicki, and then it happened very, very quick in the space of, I think, just a couple of days. So it happened very quick in terms of that, but certainly David was the guy behind the ear.
Did you think you would end up spending so many years in the United States? And do you miss being in the United States at all?
Yeah, as soon as I first got there, I have to say, because I've been to America, but I've never been to LA, so I didn't really know what to expect apart from the stuff you see on TV and some of the falseness of LA. But I have to say, as a family, you know, we fell in love with the place straight away. My wife loved it, and also it always helps no matter where you are. If you're a football player, you ultimately you want to win. So when you're winning and you're living in a good city, you know it goes hand in hand. So for us, it was it was a great place to live, and I said we really enjoyed it. I knew as soon as in the first few months I was there that I could be here for a long time, and that happened to be the case. And of course, yeah, eventually I would love to go back. It's something, you know, that we spoke about as a family, and of course it depends where, you know, my coaching role will take me, and you know if that leads me to the MLS, well, that would be. That'd be great, because I think it's certainly a league that's really grown, continued to grow, and you know we had a small, you know, part to play in that at the very start, myself, David, and a few other players that came over. So it's in a good, strong position, and it's certainly something that I would love to in the future. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get into your coaching a little bit. So, you know, what have you been doing coaching wise since you stopped your playing career, and where are you hoping to go with it?
Yeah. Well, the coaching I got, you know, I've kind of went ahead of the game, if you like, in terms of I went with the national team with Mick McCarthy for a period of time, a couple of years, and then I was also with Middlesbrough in the UK, so I was doing kind of both jobs together. So getting different experience from the national team side of things, and to the, you know, to the day to day stuff, which most of our players, well, all of them play, you know, in the UK, a lot played in the Championship, so it was quite easy for me to be the coach, assistant manager of Middlesbrough, and also watching their players for the national team. So I've basically, in the space of a couple of years, I've did it what people probably would do in 5 to 6 years, so I'm kind of ahead of the game in terms of that. So because obviously the pandemic and COVID, unfortunately we couldn't travel for 18 months, so couldn't get around and couldn't, you know, speak to clubs in terms of becoming the head coach myself, which is obviously something I want to do. I've done the assistant manager role now, but I'm ready to step in and to be a manager. You know, I've got certainly experience in terms of playing the game for such a long time, but also a few years experience of being assistant manager, you know, learning the ropes to eventually, as I said, sooner rather than later to be the head coach. And that's something that I'm excited about. I've got my own philosophies, and I have my own team and that I would have with me, and so it's exciting. I'm looking forward to the future, and looking forward for a good opportunity. I've turned jobs down because they didn't feel right to me, and has to feel right. It's like as a player, if you go as a player, the team has to feel right. And just unfortunately, some of the teams that I've got offered just didn't feel right with me at that time. But so I look forward to getting a good opportunity, and I'm excited about it.
I know how you played as a player. Has that influenced sort of your coaching philosophies, like you mentioned? You know, how would you describe the way you want your teams to play as a coach?
Very aggressive in terms of with the ball. Obviously, playing out from the back. I always played in teams that we were very, very good, and always a good footballing team. Played for Tottenham for 8 years, as you know. That Tottenham is a footballing team. They have a certain way. You know, play out from the back, play through the lines quickly. That's something that I'm big on. And, you know, getting in people's faces where it stopped people from playing. You know, fast tempo football. And ultimately to try and get from one end of the pitch to the other end fairly quickly to score goals with a good intensity and, you know, with good football intelligent people, you know, playing on my team. So that's my philosophy. Would be definitely, I'd take bits from the players I've played with, the managers I've played under. But ultimately, you have your own style, and depends obviously the personnel and the players that you bring into that football club. But definitely play quickly through the lines and play some good, attractive football for people to see.
You know, I've always thought it's interesting that other sports than soccer, like in the NBA, coaches don't need to get coaching badges, or the NFL or Major League Baseball. But in soccer, it's part of the culture. Like, did you go about getting your coaching badges, and what was that process like, if you did?
Long. It was very long. Yeah, I've got a, you know, I'm lucky enough to have, you know, my every license, the pro license, which is obviously the hardest one to get. I think there's only 10,000 people in the world that has this. So yeah, I've been doing the coaching badges when I was still playing with LA. So in the off season, I'd come back home. When I was 31, started my B and A license, and as you know, that takes a few years, and then we just managed to finish the pro license only last year. You know, so that's a great achievement, and I'm proud of that. And as I said, it's you have all these licenses, but you know, I've played the game for a long time. I understand the game, and I understand people, and you know, football. Being a manager, a coach, is also about managing people and how you can manage people, because anybody can put a training session on, but a lot of it is, you know you have to be clever in how you treat the people, and sometimes you might have to some player might need an arm around, some player might need a, you know, kick up the backside. So you have to be able to judge that as a coach, and I think that's one of my main strengths, and obviously being a captain for a long time in England and also in LA, I think that will stand me in good stead.
I'm going to say it right now. If anyone listening is an MLS team or owns a team in MLS, because I know a few of you listen, I know there's some coaching vacancies right now. So, you know, your man is here, by the way, and he's ready. But in terms of, you mentioned the pandemic, and it's been difficult for everyone around the world. Have you been able to spend more time with your family than usual during the pandemic?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think my wife is probably sick of me now, so I think she probably wants me out of house now. To be honest with you, so that's the first. This is the first time in 20 years that we've been under each other's feet with the kids. But you know what, it's all joke aside, it's been obviously great, but she knows what my passion is, and she knows what I want to do. And you know as you know, in this game, whether you're a player or a manager, that, you know, sometimes you've taken away from your comfort zone, and you know, of course, eventually I'm going to have to leave Dublin. But the last 18 months has been great, certainly with the kids, spending a lot of time with them. But I think they're sick of me as well, so I think they're ready to get rid of me.
I will say this. You and your wife, Claudine, have done some tremendous charity work raising money in Ireland for hospitals during this time and other things.
Yeah.
Why was it so important for you to do that work?
Because we were struggling. I just felt like every little help that the hospital could get, because, you know, we had a, you know, personal... where Claudine's father was one of the first in Ireland to get COVID, so... And he was in ICU for 3 weeks.
Wow.
So, that was a difficult time. And, you know, it was certainly 50-50 whether he was going to make it. Thankfully, with the great work from the hospitals, from the doctors and the nurses and the frontline workers, that he got through, and he's doing completely fine. So, you know, I came up with an idea to, you know, auction one of my last jerseys that I played, and one of my watches, one of my green Ubo watches, which is obviously means a lot to me, but I thought, you know, other people needs a way more than I do. So we're lucky enough, we raised, I think overall, you know, not just on my page, I think we 80 grand maybe on my page, and then between everything else, I think it was 300 and something thousand. So
wow.
It was great, and you know, I loved that kind of work, and I've been doing that for, you know, a long time with the Crumlin Children's Hospital. Also, where we had a golf day in a in America. I think we raised $350,000 for the kids' hospital. So I enjoy doing it. It's great. It's always good to, you know, very lucky that I'm in a position where, you know, I have a bit of a voice, and you know, if you have a voice, try and use it to the best that you can, and if you can, you know, every little helps certainly for the hospitals, and especially going through this pandemic, which has been, as you said, difficult for everybody. It hasn't been easy. So every little help that we can all do, you know, goes a long way.
Well, huge appreciation to you and your family for doing that. And I'm sure everyone over in Ireland feels the same way.
Thank you.
I do want to step back just a little bit and look at the start of your career, because you made a very wise decision early on to go to Wolves in the second tier instead of to Liverpool, where you could have gone, because you thought you'd get more playing time. And not everyone that age would have done that, including today. Who advised you on that decision? And do you think there's a lesson that all young players can take from that?
Yeah, one thing, you know, especially nowadays, obviously, that the big teams, the Man Cities and all, they can just go and get anybody, because they're buying players for all around the world, young players, and housing them and giving them money. But listen, also, you have to feel yourself. When I went to Wolves, you know, the guy Chris Evans, he's the youth development officer and still one of my best friends now. You know, I felt comfortable there. After everybody at the stadium and the training ground, it felt like a real homely feeling to it. But also, in my mind, I wanted to play for the first team quickly. And I knew that I'd have a better chance going to someone like Wolves, where they give people opportunity, young lads an opportunity, than going to, for Liverpool, for example. I remember my mother said to me, don't just sign for Liverpool because you support them. Make sure you go to the team that feels right for you. And that was one of the things. And my mother, you know, she didn't really know too much about football. My dad was a singer, even though my mother, brothers and my uncle, my granddad played till semi-professional, obviously, in Ireland, till he was 50. So, but I still didn't really know too much about that side of the war in England. So it was sound advice, but also in the back of my head, I knew that I want to play. And you know, thankfully, just turned 17 years of age and made my debut, and we scored two against Norwich away, and my mother and father was there. So, you know, and then from then on, you know, I was lucky enough to carry on for Wolves and you know, do well and move on.
Yeah, it's an incredible career. I still remember seeing you in the 2002 World Cup for Ireland. You were just 21 years old. You scored some big goals for a good team. You tied Germany, went out to Spain on penalties in the round of 16. What do you remember most about that World Cup? And how far do you think Ireland could have gone in that tournament?
Oh, we should have won that game against Spain. We were the better team. Yeah, that's certainly... when I speak about the World Cup, that's one of the regrets, because I think if we had won that penalty shootout, I think the next game was, I think, Korea. I think, and I could, don't get me wrong, Korea, they did well in that World Cup, but certainly a beatable team. And I really believed if we had got through Spain, I think we would have beat Korea and went on to maybe the semis. And you never know what happens. Listen, were we going to be favourites to win it? Absolutely not. But even to get to that stage would have been great. But listen, the World Cup, I think... every player wants to be involved in the big occasions, and there's no bigger than the World Cup. And then to go there, and then not just go there, but to make a good account of ourselves. And as I said, I was lucky to, you know, score really important goals. And obviously the one stands out against Germany in the last minute, because if we lose that, we wouldn't have the opportunity to go to the next round. So, and then we played Saudi Arabia and we beat them. We had to beat them by two goals. We beat them 3-0. And for me personally and the team, it was a great tournament, one that I look back very, very fondly of. And not just a player, but we had a good, real good team spirit, good lads. You know, we didn't take ourselves too serious. We knew when we went over that white line, you know, it was business. But away from that, around the hotel, you know, we used to always, you know, joke around and have fun. And I think that's the sign of a good team, when you've got that kind of team spirit, and we had that in abundance.
I do have a quick question for you, because I've spent time around fans of the Irish team over the years. I remember I was at Euro 2012. Why are Irish national team fans so friendly as opposed to fans of some other countries? it just seems like that's the case.
be careful what you say. I think I know who you're thinking of. Listen, Irish people, they know how to, you know, they know how to enjoy themselves. To, like, as I said, when they go to these tournaments, you know, they're the voice. You know, they're all in the green jerseys, and it's a good look, and you know, they want to have fun, and they want to see that the team do well, and they're very, very supportive. Not just, you know, I was a fan myself. I had a kid going to all these games, going to the old Lansdowne Road, and the atmosphere was always incredible. Whether we were losing or we were winning, you know, they certainly make an impact, and there's always, every time they go away, they always win supporters of the tournament, because the voices, you know, even in, you know, some of the Euros we didn't do well, certainly in 2012. We didn't do well. We had probably the toughest group that we'd ever have, but they were still there, still cheering us on, still willing us to do well. And you know, that's in their nature.
I'm wondering what you think. Can the Irish national team, the Republic of Ireland, can you get back to where things were in 2002?
Well, listen, it depends on what's coming through the system. I think there's a few young players we know are certainly in a transitional period at the. At the moment, you know, we don't have too many players, or a lot of players playing in the Premier League. A lot of our players, you know, a championship in the championship. So when I was playing, you know, a lot of us were playing the Premier League. So, but listen, you know what it's like in football. Sometimes there's a circle, and hopefully in the next few years that, you know, we'll start producing younger players that's playing at a high level and competing in these competitions, because let's face it, everybody wants the Ireland team at these tournaments.
Back to your club career, you moved to Italy and joined Inter in 2000 at just 20 years old. It was a team with Ronaldo, OG Ronaldo, Zanetti, Sedor, yeah. Vieri, Recoba, Laurent Blanc, managed by Marcello Lippi. What was it like being inside that locker room, being on that team?
Yeah, it was good. Listen, for me, it was an unbelievable experience. You know, so 20 years of age and going to one of the biggest teams in the world, the biggest clubs in the world, and playing with these big characters and big names. But you know, that's something I love to be involved in. You know, you want to be around, you know, these quality players, because they make you better. Listen, maybe I was probably a little bit too young. When I wish I went maybe a few years later, when I was a bit more experienced, and you know, I was only in the playing at the really high level, you know, only for 1 year really, because I went to, after Wolves for a few years, I went to Coventry, and I was only there for a year, and then went to Inter. So it's certainly a league I think I would have thrived on maybe a little bit later on, or a bit more experience in my career. But nevertheless, the experience itself was incredible, and as you said, to play with these players. But listen, not even that, but they're good people as well, which is the most important thing. And as you said, people like Ronaldo and Vieri, who's my friend, and Clarence, still, you know, good friend. I was with him last week at the soccer raid, and so still stay in touch with him. So great experience, great club. And actually, I just spoke to the president yesterday, the old president, Mr. Morato, who's still in touch with. So, you know, great memories, you know, great club, and the fans were always fantastic to me. And as I said, to be around them people, them players, you know, was a joy.
You must need to have a tremendous amount of self-belief to be in a locker room like that, especially at the age you were. How do you think self-belief works with players, and how did it work with you in your career?
I think you have to believe in your ability, you know, and believe what you do. You have to be confident. Especially when you're around players like that, you have to be fairly confident, comfortable in your own skin. And I was always fairly comfortable. You know, I was always comfortable on the training pitch, in the dressing room. You know, I treat everybody the same, whether you're the best player or the young kid coming through. You know, everybody is treated with the same respect. So for me, it was just, especially as being a goal scorer, you know, there's a certain elements of being a goal scorer. You have to have this belief, because sometimes you might miss a chance, but you'll always, there's another one coming again. So you have to always have that confidence in yourself, and that's off the pitch as well. It's not arrogance. It's certainly not arrogance, but you have to have that bit about you when you're playing, especially with these big teams and this big dressing rooms, because you know, you don't want to show any kind of weakness. And also, you're there for a reason. remember that. If you're a good player, you're there for a reason. So always believe in that. Never feel uncomfortable. I always like to be, you know, put yourself in uncomfortable situations to get comfortable. So and you only do that, you know, by being around, you know, top players and learning off them.
You had some really productive years at Tottenham. Are those the club years you're most proud of?
Listen, I'm proud of all of it because everywhere has took me to a different journey, you know, but certainly Tottenham, you know, if you had to ask anybody who's Robbie Keane's club, like they would say Tottenham because I was there for, you know, for 8 years and, you know, great memories there, unbelievable club, and the fans have always been brilliant to me, and, you know, as you know, mentioned earlier on, like Tottenham like to play a certain way, and the teams I played it, you know, in a good attractive way where they get the crowd off their seats, and that's something that, as I mentioned before, I would want to do. But a great club, a great history, and the new stadium now, the new training ground is incredible. And but I had really, really fond memories. I still have a great relationship with everybody there.
You did a great interview last year with my friend Kevin Egan, and you mentioned that Harry Kane had actually cleaned your boots way back in the day. What do you remember about young Harry Kane?
He was a lovely kid, very, very, very polite. What I did like about Harry was that after training myself, Berbatov, Jermaine Defoe would do shooting sessions for about 10, 15 minutes, and I continued to do that. You know, when I was even 37 years of age, because football's about habits. You know, the more you do it, the easier it becomes, the more you score goals. I keep saying to my kids, you know, you brush your teeth every morning. You know, that's a habit. You know, going out to practice all the time, practice, it becomes easier. So Harry used to always see him after training. He used to always come and just sit behind or the side of the goal to help get the balls in, and just watch. Continues to watch it now. And now I know that he does the same thing now. But I'm proud of what he's done so far. He's you know, he's an example to younger players. If you get knocked back because he went to four or five, maybe six clubs on loan, didn't really play, was on the bench a lot, and then he gets the opportunity at Tottenham, and then he takes it with both hands, and now he's, you know, ultimately one of the probably best number nines, you know, in world football at the moment. So very proud of what he's done, and, you know, I always watch out for him and make sure he's doing well, and he's certainly doing that.
So we're going to finish up here with what I call my rapid fire quiz, and I do this with the best players we've seen in the sport for the past decades. I've done it with Ronaldo and Ibrahimovic and Maldini and others. So I did prep you a little bit just so you could think about this stuff ahead of time. If I were to ask you, what's your favorite goal of your career that you scored and why? What would it be?
My first favorite one was against Blackburn when I chipped over the guy's head. I went on a run in England. In MLS, because I know a lot of MLS listeners, is when I nutmegged the guy and chipped Dan Kennedy against the Chivas.
What's the best goal you ever scored in your career based on degree of difficulty and why?
Oh, degree of difficulty. You got me there. No, I actually, the based on degree of difficulty was the one I just mentioned against Blackburn, because it was from a quick throw and I chipped over the guy and then pretended to shoot. So if the listeners want to go back from Tottenham against Blackburn, watch that goal. That was because just where I was and where I'm positioned in the pitch I was.
In the written version of this, I'll post the video from YouTube so people can see it. Who's the most difficult defender you ever faced and why?
I probably would say Fidic, Man United, and Rio Ferdinand, both as a partnership, are always difficult to play against.
Nice. Who's the most difficult goalkeeper to score against in your career and why?
Most difficult? I'd say probably Peter, when I played against Peter Schmeichel, just how big he was and his presence. You know, when he's running out there, like he looks like he's like 8'6" or something like that. But he was a top keeper.
Who was your best teammate over the years and why?
Oh, best teammate. Best teammate was Richie Dunn for Ireland. You know, we grew up together and we roomed together for 12 years. Yeah, so Richie, he's quite calm, and I'm usually the hyper one. He's the calm one. So it worked out very well.
Who is the best manager you ever had and why?
It's too many to, I've got a few that I could mention, but just because I like managers who's honest. You know, Mick McCarthy with Trapattoni was Martin Yole was always honest, could have a very, very serious side of them. Balsa could have a joke also. So yeah, I'd say them. And Bruce Arena. And Bruce Arena, of course.
Bruce might listen to this one, so good call. Who was the player you most admired in your career?
Admired the most, I would say, I have to say Messi, just because I just love watching him. The way he moves with the ball, his skill, his intelligence, you know, how he gets out of tight spaces, just for me, just to watch as a player myself, playing against him, was incredible. He played 60 minutes against us in Ireland. He was off for 3 weeks. I'll make this quickly. In my 100 cap for the national team, he just flew in the day before after having 3 weeks off of his of a pre-season. Didn't train the day before. That was it. Played 60 minutes and he could not get near him. No one could get near him. And the Irish fans gave him a stand ovation when he walked off the pitch. He was incredible.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that. That's awesome. Who's the best player in the world today and why, in your opinion?
Best player in the world today. Listen, you can't argue with Messi and Ronaldo. Look at Ronaldo even now, 36 years of age, still producing at the highest level. And also, the difficulty of the Premier League now is way higher than any league in the world at this moment in time. So I would definitely say them two.
And just to finish up here, which team do you enjoy watching the most today and why?
I think I enjoy watching Man City. Just the way they move the ball and how they pick little pockets up. And I like Liverpool as well, just because the intensity of the work and how they get in people's faces. They don't let, you know, when they're playing out from the back of the team, they're right on top of them, you know, almost like it looks like they have a rule. They have to try and win the ball back in about three to 5 seconds. That's what it looks like from the outside, and everybody is intense. So I kind of like that way, because I like the way Klopp has his players playing. But back in the day, it was definitely the Barcelona team of Xavi, Iniesta, and Messi. And that was just, I don't think we'll see a team like that ever again.
Robbie Keane had a 20-year senior club career with the LA Galaxy, Tottenham, Liverpool, Inter, Wolves, Leeds United, and others. He's the all-time leading scorer for Ireland. Robbie, it's really great to see you. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Absolute pleasure, Grant. It was lovely to speak to you again, and hopefully I'll see you very, very soon.
Thanks for listening to Football with Grant Wall. I'd like to thank Robbie Keane, as well as producer Chris Whittingham. You can now sign up for a free or paid subscription to my new newsletter at grantwall.com. It has all my writing, including a big feature on Jesse Marsh, and on-location stories for every U.S. Men's World Cup qualifier, coming into your inbox at 9 a.m. Eastern the next morning. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your support with trying to do some quality journalism. I'll see you next time.